Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We have an open forum this hour, so what do you want to talk about? Get your calls in, get your emails in soon, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I know some folks have already started posting on Facebook. You can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and do the same if that's what you prefer. So welcome to the show. What do we have to talk about? We have so much to talk about. Let's first listen to something. The few animals to survive the Zanesville Exotic Animal Farm fiasco last week won't be heading back to the farm, at least not yet. A quarantine order prohibits the Columbus Zoo from moving or releasing the animals to their owner, according to Ohio Department of Agriculture spokesperson Erica Pitchford.
Due to the conditions that the animals were kept in, that we've been out there and seen the property, we do have reason to believe that there could be, exposure to several different infectious diseases.
Yesterday, Governor Kasich pushed his exotic animal task force, which was established, I think, before this, but was put to work particularly fast, to come up with a consensus banning new private ownership of exotic animals, although current owners could keep their animals. What do you think? What do you think the solution is to this problem, or is it a solution without a problem in the first place? This was just a fluke incident, and there's no reason to get all twisted in our brains over it. It won't happen again. When has it ever happened before? It is a story that went around the world, which is kind of fun to listen to when you're listening to BBC and hearing somebody speaking from Australia about it on the web and that kind of a thing. I don't know. It's one way to get into the news, I suppose. So there was a front page story in the Dispatch today. The governor is really putting the feet to the fire of the committee that's been appointed to consider a proposed statewide ban on new private ownership of big cats, bears, monkeys, and other exotic animals. Do you think they should be rushing forward with this, or maybe do you think they should take a little bit more time? Some people said that was one of the criticisms of Senate Bill 5, which is going to be issue 2 on the ballot on November 8th. What do you think about that? Do you think they should take their time with this or move forward? I guess Dispatch reports that the governor is unhappy that Ohio has been placed in the national spotlight in a negative way in the 2 weeks since dozens of wild exotic animals were shot and killed after they were released by their owner, Terry Thompson of Zanesville. Terry Thompson then committed suicide. What do you think? Is that just a fluke, or is it a problem waiting to happen all across the state? They're saying that they're are at least dozens, if not hundreds, of these kinds of operations out there. Do you want to know where they are, or would you rather be blissfully ignorant? Let's see what else is going on. We've had some visitors to Ohio, which is always kind of interesting. Political visitors, it's going to start heating up. We're moving into that presidential election cycle. What do you think about what happened to Mitt Romney last week when he showed up at that staging area for proponents of Issue 2 and didn't know what the issue was about? 614-292-8513 is the number to call to participate in our open forum today. Remember, you can call up and you can participate, or you can listen to me talk the whole time. And, I can do that. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, but I'd rather hear from you. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page. We love it when you go to the Facebook page. You can tweet me at AnnFisherWOSU if you want to do that. 614-292-8513. What else is there to talk about today? There's plenty to talk about. I think it's kind of interesting, the governor, what he said yesterday, again in the Dispatch, thanks to Joe Varden, writes that even if it fails next week, Governor, I guess she's speaking about Issue 2, even if Issue 2 fails next week, Governor John Kasich said yesterday that the issue made a positive impact in at least one way, and that would be that it distracted everybody from his two-year $55.8 billion budget, which passed with barely a peep. Now, that might be more a function of the fact that Republicans completely dominate the Democrats in the legislature, and there really wasn't much anyone could say. But what do you think? Is that a good positive spin on issue two or not? Is that, you know, taking a optimistic view of the whole thing, or are you concerned, as some people are, people in the Democratic Party are concerned about this, and it's not any way to make a budget to distract people while it gets made? So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go online to the Facebook page at Ann Fisher, or at the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We have somebody who wants to talk about Bob Burney, but since I don't know who Bob Burney is, someone is going to have to tell me out there who Bob Burney is before I'll take that call. If you want to give us a call and talk about some of these issues, please do. The governor said that the inattention to his budget was fantastic because it is that budget that has set the framework for the state of Ohio to rebuild. So the fact that Ohioans were inattentive to this, the very budget that sets the framework for the state of Ohio, the fact that Ohioans were inattentive to that is a good thing. His comments came in response to a reporter's question about whether he thought many had already made up their minds about issue two, which trailed in a Quinnipiac University poll by 25 points last week. He says, I just know the reforms in this budget were dramatic reforms that Ohioans probably hadn't seen in probably 100 years, Kasich said when asked what problems he envisioned for his budget's passage had there been no Senate Bill 5. So probably people's focus was somewhere else. So these are things they hadn't seen in probably 100 years, and apparently because of their inattentiveness, still haven't seen it. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and talk to us there, 614-292-8513. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you.
You want to talk about issue two?
Yes, I do.
Great.
I live in Clintonville, so I live with many friends and neighbors who work for the university. I actually work in close proximity to the university, and a lot of my clients are there, and many friends who work for the state of Ohio. But I myself am self-employed,
mm-hmm.
and I do believe that, you know, there is a balance between what taxpayers can afford to support and what is optimal in the way of government services. And we see that that balance has perhaps tilted too far in the case of Greece and Italy right now, and all the stuff that's going on with their national debt. And we know that our own country has overspent its resources by an astronomical measure.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us can point to how somebody else ought to be doing something different. You know, there are those who think that wealthy people ought to be taxed at a higher rate. There are those who think that there should not be such a safety net available to those of modest means. But I have to believe that the truth lies in the middle someplace. And I do believe that we've gotten to that point where government needs to reduce its outlay for the cost of staff. And there is we really have gotten to the point where I don't know that we can afford the optimum in education and the optimum in health care and the optimum in safety services anymore, because we just financially don't have the resources to pay for it.
Do you think we've had the optimum in healthcare?
I don't believe we have.
Okay.
But I believe that that's got a lot more to do with structural issues than mm-hmm. it has anything to do with the compensation to healthcare professionals. If you look at advertisements, you see, because, you know, a lot of what's going on in the media right now, you know, this law is primarily focused on controlling the cost of labor, and that being through both retirement program and healthcare programs and the cost of insurance, asking people who work for the state to pitch in a percentage of the cost of their...
Which most of them already do, of course. You know that.
Yeah. And the question is the size of the percentage.
My
sister works for the feds, and they pay half.
It's a percentage of how much the percentage of what they I think it's something like 12% is an average, and they want it to go up to 15%, which I haven't heard that much griping about that per se. It has a lot more to do with the freedom to collectively bargain these kinds of things, and
right. Well, that's obviously what until the state addresses the means by which these compensation programs are established, the collective bargaining has to be the first step, because that is the means by which the wages and benefits are established. And things like staffing levels, which is a big thing for nurses, and staffing levels, you've watched the media, it's a big thing for public safety workers.
Mm-hmm.
At least they're presenting it in that way. But I have many friends in all those professions, and I would love to see them get everything possible. But the fact is that I'm making less than $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have health insurance. I have no retirement program. I go on Match.com, and because I'm a single guy,
mm-hmm.
and all these women of my age are looking for somebody who's financially secure and going to be able to retire before he's 60 and travel with him. And there's no way. I'll work till I drop.
Do people actually write that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You see it all the time. And one of the things about Match.com is anybody on there wants you to be making as much or more than they are.
Yeah.
But the point, though, is mm-hmm. that, full participation in our society the American dream is largely difficult to achieve for people who don't work in for large institutional employers. There is a major income disparity between those who work for an organization like the state of Ohio, the Ohio State University, or any one of the teachers' unions, or those types of large institutional employers, all good and decent people trying to do a job, ethically. But there's a disparity between their income and that of those people who are working in private sector.
Well, there's a bigger disparity, there's a disparity in income between, the heads of corporations, too, and the people there's all kinds of income disparities out there.
Right.
Much lesser one between someone like you and somebody who, say, is a clerk for BMV.
Well, I recognize that. But the fact is that the clerk for BMV very well may not even have a college education, and that person is likely to have a secure retirement program, health insurance, and I don't have either
mm-hmm.
as a self-employed person. That's the bottom. I would love to see everybody get all the material satisfaction achievable within ethical means. But I do believe that the scales are tilting so that our society cannot afford the tax burden associated with the level of government services which we now have. And a lot of it, as you said, is structural. It's got to do with the tax code.
Right. And particularly when it comes to education, for that matter.
Yeah. And I applaud Warren Buffett. That guy is one of the most beautiful examples of a man with a lot of money and an ethical base. To step up and say, capital gains tax rates are inappropriate in this country. God bless him.
He's catching some flack, though.
He is, but he's catching flack from people who don't have his ethics.
Hey, Chris, I got to take a break. So I'm getting the look through the glass.
Thank you for the
Thanks.
Enjoy your day.
You bet. Thanks for calling, Chris. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. We have some calls waiting, but I'm still trying to figure out who Bob Burney is and what he said. So let us know about that, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
89.7 FM is your source for NPR news and local news. Stay up to date with issues impacting life in Central Ohio. The award-winning WOSU News team keeps you connected to the community, and the State House News Bureau has the latest in-depth coverage of state government. Listen to news from across the country and from our own backyard on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Sunshine today and a high near 60 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low right around 40. Another nice day for Wednesday with sunshine and a high of 64.
Support for 89.7 comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU public media.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're trying to get to those calls, so please be patient. We're stuck on a call right now, but we are trying to get to them, so hang in there. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an open forum right now. You can also go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be checking that very shortly. And let's see. Tom in Circleville, I'm coming your way. Hi, Tom. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Ann.
Hi, Tom.
Open forum.
Yeah, yeah.
My comment is I don't see a need in people having exotic animals except for, you know, some kind of fight issue or whatever. But is there, you know, do they check to see if these people have the proper training to take care of these animals?
Not right now. They're completely unregulated. Ohio is the most unregulated state when it comes to exotic animal ownership in the country, apparently.
Okay,
quite a distinction.
I know, that's horrible. Well, what they should do is, you know, my thought on it is that the people that have these exotic animals need to have the training to take care of them properly, and also the facilities they have are adequate. And the next thing is the people on this panel that the governor has set up. You know, are they politicians or are they veterinarians or are they people that are exotic animal control experts, you know, people that know the nutritional facts and everything and what type of area they need to be in?
Let me ask you this, Tom. If that is the case and if they do create those kinds of standards, do you think that people who have already owned exotic animals should be able to should be grandfathered in and not be affected by a new ban or a new restrictions?
No. They should be under the new law. You know, a matter of fact, I think a certified veterinarian, or a qualified assistant should be sent there once a month for a check-off on these exotic animals to make sure that they are being properly taken care of. I live in Circleville, and we have a lot of horses and a lot of farm animals, and every now and then, I was on a grand jury one time where we had a guy that didn't take care of his horses, okay?
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the horses were, and then they were skin and bones. You had to destroy five of them because they were beyond saving. And his thing was, well, they were pooing, so they had to have been fed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is just horses. And the person couldn't take care of them. So, you know.
Right.
I believe that, you know, and usually people that have horses have gigantic hearts and, you know, they love the horses more than they love people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have exotic animals, there should be somebody there checking to make sure you're doing your job properly, that the animals are taken care of properly, that they have room to roam, they're not in a small cage, you know. And I just don't understand why people need leopards, grizzly bears, black bears.
Well, sometimes, you know, Mike Thompson interviewed a woman last week who said, it was last week, who said that a lot of her animals are they're rescues. So she kind of got in the business and ended up having quite a menagerie because she's rescuing other animals.
Well, I know that these people have big hearts, and yes, it's a rescue animal. And I listened to that program, too, and she seemed like a competent person.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of people that aren't competent. They're just in it for the money.
like we have these people that breed wolves and, you know, I guess half wolves, half shepherd or whatever, you know, and then you read about in the paper where it's taken off some young kid's face because the owner didn't know how to control it.
Yeah.
You know, I have animals. I have dogs. I have cats. I got chickens, you know, but I take care of them. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to feed my chickens, you know, and when I get home, I take their eggs, and I even got them to where they come up to the gate and they want me to pet them.
And people say chickens don't have personalities. Tom, I'm going to move on, and
okay.
I thank you for your call, though.
All right, you're welcome.
Take
have a
care.
Great day.
You too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So far, we've been talking about issue two. What do you think? Chris called in and said that he supports issue two / Senate Bill 5 and thinks that something has to give in the state of Ohio. We simply can't afford the standards of, you know, the workplace standards, the benefits packages that have become the norm in Ohio, a la the public employee unions. What do you think? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're in an open forum, and we welcome your questions or comments. And Lori in Kenton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann.
Hi,
Thanks
Lori.
For taking the call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to address some of Chris's comments on issue two and regarding to affording it. And I think it's true that there are many school districts and municipalities that are pinched for money right now and can't afford some of the things that they've been able to pay for in the past. But what I find difficult about issue two is the fact that it's the state stepping in and removing what is essentially, in many cases, a local issue. And people forget that when a contract is established, it's been bargained for. It's not that the employees just came in, you know, with a weapon and said, here, this is what we want. We're taking it. It's been negotiated, and usually these local entities hire professionals that help them through a negotiation and develop a contract.
Lori, what one of the criticisms has been that when you belong to a union, you pay your union dues, and part of that money goes to support candidates out there. And when you're negotiating with people that could stand to benefit or not with your union, you're not really bargaining anymore. They're kind of being held hostage because they don't want to tick off the union. So the public officials they're supposed to be negotiating with or the people that the public officials hire really don't have that much leverage because they're battling something more than just a negotiator at a bargaining table.
Well,
does that make sense?
Right, I understand what you're saying, mm-hmm. And I do see on a national level evidence of that. For instance, it seems to me like a teachers union in New Jersey is very powerful, but I don't see, you know, that somebody having a yard sign for somebody. I've been a reporter and I've covered a lot of these negotiations and they're very. I don't think there's any holds barred. I really think that the people who are responsible for paying out the public money take that seriously, and they're very. I mean, there are so many demands in for instance, in a school district. You know, should we, you know, repave the parking lots? We need new buses. There are conflicting demands for any budget, mm-hmm. And what I see the people who are in charge of the money and who are negotiating against the unions, as if you will, are pretty conscientious about that.
They say that public employees collectively, for lack of a better word, have taken about $1 billion hit in the last few years in terms of wages and benefits in Ohio.
Correct.
Already,
and I've seen that happen. That. The bargaining goes both ways. I've seen cases where, you know, the management comes to the union and say, hey, we don't have it this year. Can you take a wage freeze? And they might not like it. And they might not. And they might try to, you know, say, well, okay, but we'll do something else down the line. But to me, this collective bargaining process opens up communication that makes things better in many ways, other than the simple labor contract, is that it really puts people talking about whatever their goal is, whether it's educating children or providing public safety or whatever, the ongoing process of the negotiation is very valuable in terms of deciding what's important and how we get to a certain goal, aside from the money.
Okay. Lori, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Lotus, you're on the air from Columbus. Welcome to the show, Lotus.
Hey, thank you for the forum. It's a good conversation.
Thank you.
A couple of things. I think that I have an issue with the governor being so open about the manner in which he does the public's business. I think any public official, which is what he is, who throws out diversions in order to have private or personal agendas passed without conflict is a really bad habit that this government in all levels is starting to exhibit, and I think that it's very anti-democratic. And the fact that he is so willing to say it publicly, unabashedly, just goes to show, in my opinion, the level of disconnect between what public officials' job should be and what the way that they're actually functioning.
And just I just want to refresh people's memories about what we're talking about. This would be the Joe Varden article in the Dispatch today, where Governor Kasich said that the conflict and all the static over issue two or Senate Bill 5 was good, even if they don't pass it, because it helped get his budget through with little conflict, right?
Yeah, and you know we also see that in habits with lobbying and things where they have a balloon in one hand and their hand under the table in another, and I'm having a serious issue with that, and you know people can say what they want about this Occupy movement, but it's really about occupying your mind and having a greater expectation of your public officials. And then in speaking to that when it comes to this, the issue too, is that the matter of fact is that this is a labor union busting move, and the governor, in my mind, is trying to bust the ability of people to unionize and as workers collectively leverage against better work environments and often better circumstances for the services that they provide. And historically speaking, unions are the last stopgap to fascism, especially if you have a government that is operating where they're throwing, you know, parties on one side so that you don't see what's going behind the door. I think that those two circumstances combined are a very dangerous habit of this country, and that if we don't correct those types of things in very short order, particularly if they start busting unions, mm-hmm. I feel that the American people are going to see very clearly what these people's agenda truly are. Good. And I think that it's a desire to bring down the quality of living, the standard of living, the ability of the individual to affect change in their government, while we have people who are running our government who want to throw diversionary tactics at us while they hide really what they're doing.
Okay. Lotus, thanks for your call.
Thank you for the conversation.
Thanks for listening. Justin in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Hi, thank you, Ann. I'm a member of the Occupy Columbus movement, and I really want to say that the previous caller, I think, had it right on the money. Today, on the northeast quadrant of the State House lawn, the Occupy Columbus movement is hosting a vote no on issue two rally. I just wanted to invite you and your listeners to come. We have speakers and music. People have been camped out in front of the State House for the last 25 days.
Right.
And, you know, this, I just want to agree with the previous caller that this is a bigger issue, and Occupy Columbus has voted unanimously to support workers unionizing and collective bargaining, and that is a fundamental principle of this country. And we as occupiers and we really feel that we're sharing the same fight with state employees.
Justin, are you down there now?
I'm on my way down there right now. I just stopped to pick up some coffee for people downtown, and I'm on my way back there right now. Yeah.
Have you been down there?
I'm there every single day. Yes.
How's it been going? Because we've been hearing about the violence in Oakland, and now there's another place, I think, in Texas where they've had problems. What's, of course, New York City. How's it going?
It's going really well. We have been in talks with the city about getting a permit, and we've had a permit for the site that we're at now on in front of the State House. The police department has been very, very great, and our rapport with them is excellent, I would almost say. At this point, we're really hoping. I don't know if you're aware of what happened in the City Council of Orange County. Granted them a permit for the occupiers in Orange County to camp around the City Hall there, and we're really pursuing that model and pressuring City Council and Mayor Coleman to take a stand and to say that this police brutality is not going to happen in our city, that this is obviously a free speech issue, and for them to take leadership and lead the country in this effort, and hopefully that will help help stop the brutality that has been going on in Oakland and Atlanta and Cincinnati and New York and all these other cities around the country. But I would say overall the movement is strong. We're growing, and people are hopeful and determined to stay until we're heard. And that's really what this is about, is having our government hear us. And I think the collective bargaining with issue two is, it goes right along those lines. I mean, people being able to come together and under one voice petition their government for grievances or to talk to or to speak to safer worker working conditions or more reasonable pay, issues like that.
Okay. Well, you have a beautiful day for it, Justin.
We're really excited, and I hope to see you down there, Ann.
Thanks. Take care, and thanks for listening. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bob in Springfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Yeah, I'm curious as to why WOSU is abandoning their AM outlet.
Oh, they're not abandoning it. They're selling it.
Well, I realize they're selling it, but that eliminates my listening to it because I cannot get your FM station.
Do you have a computer?
Yes, but I think it's... I do not have internet connections because I'm legally blind and I can't read the screen. So, and besides, I think listening to it on a computer is not anything I wish to do.
Well, WOSU is part of the deal to expand to the FM airwaves with 89.7. Had to sell 820. It was a business decision. It was doing, most prudent use of the money that people entrust to us as a public radio station.
Yeah. Well, as I say.
It was part of the purchase of 101.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I heard that.
Yeah.
I'm a listener. I'm also a contributor, and I wonder how many others are going to lose the wonderful service of WOSU because they cannot receive it anymore. I wondered if that had ever been looked at.
Well, I would that there aren't very many people that listen to AM radio anymore. Now, there was a fellow that called in our last open forum who shares your concerns, and of course we're sympathetic to it, but he had choices, and he said he still didn't want to give up his AM, that he could listen to FM or he could listen to, he just likes listening to AM radio, and that's kind of hard. I appreciate that, but there's always going to be the reason, when they went to 101, classical 101, when the frequency changes, you're going to pick up some people and you're going to lose some people, and that's just the physics of it.
Oh, okay.
But we're not happy about making you unhappy. I just hope you understand that. And I hope you'll try to listen. There are services out there that can help you use your radio, but help you use your computer. But I understand your frustration, and I'm glad you're listening now.
Oh, okay.
All right. Take care. Bob.
Bye.
We're going to continue our open forum when we return. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we've got some against issue two callers. We'll get to those. But if you're for issue two, we want to hear from you, too. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Dr. Michael Carrera teaches school kids about sex.
Sexual ignorance is not bliss.
There's consensus that schools should teach sex ed, but how far do you go?
It's important not to rip the condom when you open the package.
I'm Neil Conan. What should schools teach about sex? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is here from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 43 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine and a high near 60 degrees. Clear skies for tonight and a low of 40. Sunny on Wednesday and a high of 64. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 44 degrees. And a slight chance of rain looking ahead to Thursday. Then some sunshine and a high of 58.
Support for 89.7 comes from United Way of Central Ohio. United Way brings partners together with community support to create lasting change in people's lives through programs in education, income, health, and home. More at liveunitedcentralohio.org.
Stay right here in just about 20 minutes, beginning at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides, and it's Tech Tuesday, a discussion of social media and consumerism and gadgetry. Join us for Tech Tuesday at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We have an open forum on All Sides with Ann Fisher today. We want to get to as many of those calls as we can. We've got lots against issue two. If you're for issue two, we want to hear from you as well. Let's get to some emails now from Pedro. If anything, Governor Kasich's ban on exotic animals comes a bit too late. Certainly too late for the dozens of animals who had to be put down. This ban should make clear that we do not have the right to own these animals and that instead they should be granted the right to roam free in their own natural environment. People who have the resources to keep so many of these animals in captivity should instead donate funds to natural parks worldwide where these animals can lead a normal, stress-free life. An email from Tom in Waverly. The governor said that the public was inattentive to his budget. Apparently, he has forgotten that he made it clear to concerned citizens that he didn't want to hear from anyone about the budget. And remember, he said that in terms of his plans for the state and thus the budget, we needed to get on the bus or the bus was going to run over us. I think he made it very clear that he did not want to hear from constituents about the budget. And he must have been out of the state when all the protesters flooded the state house in protest of Senate Bill 5. Inattentive? I don't think so. Well, that's what he was saying. Everyone was distracted by Senate Bill 5, Tom. But point taken. I get it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. You support issue two.
Yes, I do.
Hi, Bill.
Hi. I just believe that the only fair thing to do is to vote yes on issue two. I work... I happen to be a union member. I've worked for both union and non-union companies. I just don't see the point in paying public sector workers so much more and in giving them special privileges, in particular, having their own special retirement plan and being exempt from Social Security, as well as banking their sick days and retiring and then double dipping and many things that private sector employees, even if they're union, can't do.
Well, private sector employees, they may have their own special retirement, but they pay into it. It's not like they don't pay into it. They pay for it. They don't get Social Security either.
Right. They pay into it. But what I'm saying is if you force people to pay into Social Security, why should certain groups be exempt? It's just patently unfair. I mean, if Social Security is going to go broke, why should all the public sector employees not have to worry about that since they have their own private plan?
Well, there's a history behind that, and I wish I could recall it right now, about why don't they do Social Security? I don't know if there was a law against it. It was some kind of statutory thing because they were public employees and that Social Security wasn't for them. I really don't know, but I'd love to know. And
Think that the politicians have any real impetus to bargain in good faith for the taxpayers. Their interest is in getting reelected. Therefore, their best move is to give the public sector unions basically whatever they want in order, to help them get reelected. Union members only represent 11.2% of this country, and the people that are wanting us to vote no on issue two, they want to point to policemen, firemen, and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very, very small percentage of the public sector employees. You got to think about the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, the DMV, every state agency. All these people get every holiday you can think of. They get better retirement programs. They get better health insurance.
Well, depending on where you work, they get better. It's not just a black and white situation, do you think? I mean, some people, middle-class people, make a good living and get good benefits from their company still, don't they? Or do you think because nobody else does, the public worker shouldn't anymore either?
I believe it should be fair. Yes, mm-hmm. there are some private sector companies that pay as well as the state or the federal government or even local governments, but the vast majority of private sector employees doing the same type jobs don't get paid anywhere near as much or have anywhere near as good of benefits as the public sector workers.
Okay. All right. Well, there's differing opinions on that, as you know, but I appreciate your call, Bill. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we're going to go to James now in Columbus. James, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. James of Columbus. I just want to say that I'm not a real big union advocate, but here's the long-term, long-range plan that the Republicans are trying to do. If you would look at the fact that what they want to do is give more power back to the states, and in giving more power back to the states, they would end and try to end the federal minimum wage law. That's the next big issue that will be coming up during the elections of next year for the presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
And also, with the Republicans not wanting to work with President Obama, it's a concentrated effort of them to not for him not to be reelected by holding the American people captive with working with him to create jobs. And here's the long-term effect that people don't look at. Hypothetical situation, worst-case scenario here. Let's say the Republicans take over the Senate, all of Congress, and also the White House. And let's just say by the time next year, worst-case scenario, that the unemployment rate hits 17%, 18%, and you got 30-some million people, 28 million people out of work. Now, do you think that private sector, once the Republicans take over everything, you think private sector is going to start hiring people immediately, right away, because Obama and the Democrats are out of there? No, it's going to still take years.
Mm-hmm.
And you have complete anarchy during that time. So people aren't looking at the long-term, long-range effects of what the Republican Party is doing. In their attack against the unions, they want to destroy the middle class and just have two. That's it.
Okay. James, we're going to move on. We appreciate your call. Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. Dale, I'm coming your way. Dale in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dale.
How you doing?
Good.
Real quick on issue two. As I see it, you can't bring a chainsaw into an operating room to do heart surgery. It's too vast, too broad, too cutting. Parts should be initiated. I agree with some of the things at issue two, but no, you can't bring a chainsaw to a heart surgery.
So you think it was that overreach issue?
Oh, overreach is an understatement. This is a chainsaw.
Well, they didn't do it in Wisconsin, and I'm wondering, why do you think they did it in Ohio? What do you think was the dynamic in Ohio at work that the governor and lawmakers thought they could get it through in Ohio, but in Wisconsin they didn't, for instance, didn't affect law enforcement?
Well, I think in Wisconsin they were a little more aware that would create a lot more opposition. And in Ohio, I think it's the audacity of a Wall Street man coming in as a governor to do exactly what he wants, because he has total control, I think he was just arrogant, and they were just arrogant in the fact that they could do it, okay?
Okay.
The Wall Street thing, real quick, this is a movement.
You mean the Occupy Wall Street thing?
Right.
Yeah.
This is a movement that will not be stopped. No one sees it. No one will admit it. And I'm paraphrasing Gandhi in his nonviolent revolution, that first they ignore you, which at first they did. Because if those 2,000 people that occupied Wall Street to begin with had been Tea Partiers, you would have had every media in the world there. First they ignore you, then they criticize you, and you've heard the criticisms there. You know, punks and all these, you know, low-life people out there. Then they fight you, and that's what's begun now in places like Oakland. And by the way, the movement now has a martyr with that 24-year-old soldier.
He's still alive, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it, still... Yeah, I mean, they chant his name all over the country.
Right.
But the Gandhi says, first they ignore you, then they criticize you, then they fight you, then you win. And this, I can't emphasize how much of a change this is going to have on this country.
Okay.
And I can't be any prouder of the 20-something generations worldwide that are taking the world on and the power structures on and the sons of plunder on.
Okay.
And I think they're going to win in the long run.
All right, Dale. Thanks for your call. We have a couple, one Facebook and one email from Brian on Facebook. He says, what's up with the lack of mayoral debates? The Columbus candidates for mayor had one debate, and it was at a private club during a work day. I guess getting their message out to the voters isn't important. Actually, anybody's welcome to go to the Metropolitan Club meetings. It was, however, during the work day. So, but just so you know, Metropolitan Club, Columbus Metropolitan Club, anyone's welcome. Of course, you have to pay for lunch, but that's okay. But that was it. You're right. We have an email from Mark. The fellow who called from Springfield who can't receive the 89.7 FM signal might want to investigate the various indoor and outdoor FM antennas that are available. Springfield is 42 miles from Columbus, well within the range that these antennas are designed to cover. If he gets a good enough antenna and gets help setting it up, he should be able to get 89.7 FM. Thank you, Mark, for that suggestion. Let's see. I want to get to Pro Issue 2, and I think, Neil, that's you. Neil, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a former state employee.
Okay.
My father is retired from the state. He receives PERS, mm-hmm. Public Employees Retirement System. Now, you asked about the regulation, why they don't get Social Security. The
right.
deduction from each paycheck for PERS is more than what the standard rate is for Social Security.
Right.
And that's how they get around it.
And they don't have a choice. They have to do it. Is that
pretty
right?
Pretty much, yeah.
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 Okay.
Now, you know, if you're a professor or somebody, you can get around that one way or another, but the normal state employees are pretty well stuck with PERS.
Okay. Which
my
is,
biggest gripe is
yeah.
the state employees receive more benefits than the average worker. I own my own company now. And I've set up 401ks and everything for my employees.
Mm-hmm.
They have to pay for that. State workers are getting a real good break. They ought to start paying for their own retirement.
I mean, they do pay for their own. They do contribute to their retirement. They pay.
They don't pay the same percentage.
Well, for their retirement, some people don't even have an option for a retirement plan.
Well, that may be.
Yeah, I mean, but as far as, yeah, the percentages differ, that's for sure. In some municipalities, in some places, they don't pay anything for their health and care insurance, but most do, right? You know, 10, 12%.
Well, my employees pay almost 20%,
mm-hmm.
and they're happy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see what the gripe is.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I'm going to get to one more call. And Neil, I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292. Well, we can't take any more calls. I've just been told. So, Kate, I'm coming at you. We only have about a minute left. Kate, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ann. I just wanted to say real quick that I moved to Ohio about 2 years ago. And from where I sit, just recently, our state has fetuses testifying at the state house. We have private zoo wild animals escaping and being executed. And now, you know, collective bargaining is on the table. So I think what an issue here is when you vote in an election, the people who voted for Kasich, they needed to believe him. They needed to believe who he told us he was and what he said he was going to do, because he's doing it. That being said, this debate is very heartbreaking for me. You know, the caller who talked about the firemen, police officers, and teachers just being a very small part of the population, these are the people who stormed into those burning towers on 9/11. These are the people we entrust our children to. These are the people who show up, you know, when there's a problem in our community. And prison wardens, they do not make a lot of money. They help, you know, our society as well.
We're running out of time.
And it's insulting, and it's about integrity, in my opinion. And that's why I'm voting no on issue two.
Well, thanks for calling us, Kate. I appreciate your listening.
Thank you.
Take care. And everybody else out there, sorry we couldn't get to your calls. I promise we'll do another open forum as soon as possible. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.